Welcome to the Chamber Focus Show, where chamber professionals gather for industry news, best practices, and peer-to-peer networking. Here are your hosts, Frank Kinney and Greg DeRocher.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chamber Focus Show. This is where we interview chamber professionals and chamber experts from around the world. I'm Frank Kinney. My co-host is Chamber Executive of the Year for all of Canada, Greg DeRocher, the Cambridge, Ontario Chamber. Greg will be here any minute now. He's got a radio show he does just before this. Our special guests today are Jason Camus and Mary Ellen Dabrowski, and we're going to be talking about all things chamber-related. Let me bring Jason in here. Jason, go ahead and request that seat, and we'll get the show started here. How you doing, Jason?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you give people a little background on yourself? How is it that you find yourself in the chamber industry?
Well, I started out as a Convention and Visitors Bureau director when I moved to Kansas about 11 years ago. And I had a little stint in between. I ran a CVB underneath the chamber for a little while. I left for about 3 or 4 years, ran a YMCA in the Kansas City area, then went back to a different chamber in Paola, and I took over here in Gardner about a year ago. So I've had a little bit of chamber experience.
Little bit of diverse experience and time lapses there and such. You know, it's funny how so much of what we learn in other industries is transferable to the industry.
Yeah. Oh, completely. And that's, you know, prior to that, I had some stints working for, I actually worked for Red Lobster for a number of years in the 90s and did restaurants. And while I was a CVB director, I bought a coffee shop. I don't know. I was inspired to work a little harder and bought a coffee shop and owned a coffee shop for a couple of years until my first child was born. And then I realized I couldn't do a full-time job and a kid and a coffee shop. So something had to give.
Yeah, but then now you work for a chamber, and that's also a 24/7 kind of business.
It is, and it isn't. You know, I got to be honest. I'm lucky. I don't have to live in my community where I work, and while I might like to do that, it's just not possible with my personal situation, and so it works out well because on Saturdays and Sundays nobody really calls me, and frankly, I took over a chamber that was somewhat struggling and you know, had kind of lost its way, so. As we bring things back, I'm being very purposeful not to add things in that are going to overburden me, but also really overburden members. I mean, members don't want to be doing stuff on Saturdays and Sundays all year long either. So we're very conscious of what we add and what we don't add here.
It's funny how we have a tendency to fill up every spare moment with something. And that's oftentimes not the best business model. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I come from the mindset, I try to use my coffee shop experience. And I think, you know, I belonged to a couple chambers of commerce at that point. I didn't have time to go to events and go to coffees and go to luncheons and all of that, even if I knew they were valuable. And so when I took over here, literally all we do are two coffees a month, which are an hour long. There's no real real challenge to doing them. I mean, we just sign people in, the business hosts. That's pretty much it. We make some announcements. And as we've been having this conversation, okay, what are the new programs we're going to add next year? And we're like, well, we could add a luncheon. If we're adding a luncheon, we're getting rid of a coffee. You know, we're going to be very, you know, we just realize that business owners don't have the time to come to everything. And so we're being very purposeful about trying to add value to their membership without expecting them to actually attend anything.
But there is a certain segment of your membership that really does rely on the networking. I've been hearing a lot of chambers say, you know, a very small percentage of it, of our members take advantage of it, so we're going to get rid of almost all the networking. And I think that's a mistake because there is that group that, man, that's the only reason they belong. What do you think?
I do agree. And I think what happens sometimes we fall into a rut of doing the same thing with our networking. And I think if anything, what they like is to see some variety. So as an example, this last Wednesday, our coffee host dropped out a couple weeks prior because they had to go out of state for some business. And so I thought to myself, we're going to do a mystery coffee. And so we advertise it as a mystery coffee. We don't tell anybody what's happening. I had people come in, who's the mystery guest? I'm like, I didn't say mystery guest. I said mystery coffee. They showed up. We had a local donut shop And we started a little sooner than we normally would. We introduced a few people, and we had actually packaged up donuts and didn't tell anybody. We broke them into groups, people they didn't know, and we sent them off to three or four chamber businesses that don't traditionally come to our coffees, but are big community supporters, just because they open at 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning and they don't have the staff to get out. And both the attendees loved it. And the businesses were like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. We never can come. And so it worked out really well. And I got more comments from that was really neat. We enjoyed doing something different than just having the same structure, but it's still a lot of the same people. So I think if we can mix some things in, I think that keeps people excited about what you're doing.
I like the idea that you made it a mystery. People love mysteries. People love to be surprised. There's something about that in marketing. If you can put out there that mm-hmm. we've got something coming for you, it's pretty exciting. But we can't quite share what it is. They know it's a game, but they're yeah. all in on it. Have you tried anything like that?
Yeah, we actually did. The reason the mystery coffee came up at my last chamber, we always struggled because our coffees were Friday mornings, and the Friday before a holiday weekend, you never know if you're going to get 10 people or 50 people, you know? And so we're like, okay, let's try this. It was the Friday before Memorial Day. We really put it out there. We had the largest attended coffee we'd ever had. There were like 75 people, and we were normally getting about 30 or 35. And I think they were expecting that. There were a few there I think were a little disappointed because they were expecting some big announcement. We were announcing some big company coming to town. But we did a similar type of thing. And I had people talked about it for two weeks. They would talk about, oh, that was so fun. That was so different. I hope you do more. And the hard part is we'd have to schedule it in. And it costs us a little money to do it. But if it keeps some of that excitement, I think people like it. Most people like a mystery. They like to know. And then I had people show up that don't normally show up at a coffee because they're like, wait a minute, there's got to be something really good going on here, you know, type yeah. thing. So that's always a good plus.
They're talking a lot about the fear of missing out nowadays, that there's so much content out there. There's so much going on. Our lives are so busy and people, they don't want to miss out on something. If their peers are there and if it's the exciting thing and everybody's going to be talking about it, we now have this fear of missing out. So it sounds like that event there might have put that that fear in some people.
Yeah, and I think it did. And I think, you know, you make a great point. You talk about all the content and you don't want to miss out on stuff. And I think that's one of the things that we've tried to do both at my last chamber and here is really try to sift through all of that people might, you know, if I get to know my members well enough and know what they are afraid they're going to miss out on and then letting them know when it happens, you know, we kind of be, you know, while I'd love to have the time to create tons of new content, I feel like sifting through the existing content and curating it and getting it out to the right people, whether it's an email to three of my members because they care about a hospital in the city or something in the technology world that matters to a few of my startups. I really try to tailor that and I do a lot of that constantly. And I think that's big for them. They see a lot of value in that.
Well, this is music to my ears. Just today I went to a chamber person. They do one of these e-newsletters that's curated by a machine. And it's just more content. It's content I could have found on my own by going to a newspaper or, you know, my RSS feed or reader and all these sort of things. Or Clout. You go to Clout and they say, hey, here's a bunch of content you should read, but it's 90% of it doesn't apply.
Yep.
And it just doesn't serve your members to put out automated content. A human being, somebody like yourself that actually cares about what somebody wants to see, if you've read it, if you've at least scanned it, and then you forward it on, has a ton of value, I think.
Yep. And you don't have to do it a lot. I mean, we do it. I might do for in the insurance industry, you know, I think about my insurance agents and agencies here, maybe four times a year, I find some interesting article about, you know, what's going on in the insurance world, some new technology that comes out. And I just send it out to them. And I think that, you know, it goes to something else you've kind of preached in the past or more recently, too, is we've got to start segmenting the information we send out because there's so much information out there. If we don't segment our members and I send, you know, while I think they all need to know Google, I know the ones that are going to take the time to actually, you know, update their Google listings and that. So I have to figure out who are those people I'm sending it to that are actually going to read it and do something with it. Because if you send them the wrong content, eventually they tune it out anyways. And they're not going to look to me as that expert for them.
Yeah, good points. Hey, let's get around to some of the questions I have for you on today. You know, you were, some might say cursed and some might say blessed, because you have, you went from a chamber that you had running like a well-oiled machine to take over a chamber that was basically starting back up from scratch and rebuilding. Now, some people would like to go to a chamber that's been run by a total pro for 20 or 30 years and step into an amazing situation, but you chose, because you could have, I know you well enough, you could have worked anywhere in the country, basically, and taken over almost any chamber. You have that kind of skill set, but you decided to take over a rebuild. Why did you do that, and how's that going? What have you learned?
Well, I mean, I have that entrepreneurial nature. I like to solve problems, and I like to fix things and see how I can. I'm always talking about improvement, and I'm one of those few people who loves change. And so for me, you know, I would have been at the last chamber, and the last chamber when I had gotten there was run pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, it just needed to maybe be re-energized. And so we added some new programs and so forth. And I think we did a good job. We grew it a little bit, but it was pretty much, I mean, we had 80% market share. This, I came to this chamber. I knew about it. I really contemplated it. I mean, the opportunities here long-term are huge. And do I think I'll stay here for 20 years? I have no clue. I might stay here for 3 to 5. And, you know, I might stay a long time, but, you know, we have a ton of development here. And then just that idea of, wow, there's not, the members aren't, the expectations have been set so low that anything you do is really good. I mean, now the flip side is, the challenge of that is, they don't know what they want because they have not experienced anything before. So when I say, when I survey them, hey, what do you want to do? They're like, well, we don't even know what we can do. You know, they don't know what a chamber could be. And so I'm kind of, sometimes I'm left in the lurch of, all right, well, I'm going to make the decision the best I believe it should be done. And hopefully they'll give me input if they don't like it, or if I need to change course a little bit, that type of thing.
Did you find that you didn't go in there meaning to double the membership in a couple of years, because first you had to create something that was worth buying?
Yeah, completely. I mean, we, you know, the view when I came in was, and people laugh because my passwords, I used a password that kind of related to a year. And I said, and everybody's like, why are you using that? I'm like, it's like a 5-year project, we'll call it. So, you know, and everybody's like, oh, that makes sense. And, you know, so I just kind of viewed it as, it's a long-term game. And I, you know, I feel for the chambers that, you know, they worry just about the dollar tomorrow. That's not how I view it. I view it as it's, you know, I want to build long-term relationships and relationships that matter here, that people, I would rather retain 95% and sell half as many memberships than make more money and churn through. And part of that's just the nature of our community. We don't have enough businesses to churn through. We're not growing that quickly. Yeah. And so this year we didn't sell. I made no active sales. And we sold about 25, 27 new memberships. Just from word of mouth, people hearing that things were turning the corner, that there was new leadership, some new businesses come to town. And as of next Tuesday, we'll hopefully formally approve our tiered dues structure. And after that, now we're going to go out and sell, because we actually have something to provide them. We can say, hey, here are your, nobody's ever known what their benefits were here for years. And so why people joined the chamber and just paid us dues and didn't know what they were going to get, I have no clue.
It's interesting. We're blessed in this industry that there's a long history. We have a great brand, and it's, for the longest time, it was the thing to do. Is if you were a small business person in a community, especially a smaller community, you joined the chamber. And it's not quite so easy anymore, but we do have some of that residual. It's still the right thing to do.
Yeah, and people, and you know, and the part of that is the challenge there has been convincing, you know, I've got a board who's never had board orientation. They didn't know what was expected of them. They were down to like 5 board members a year ago, right around the time we lost our tax exempt status. So it all went down. It kind of all went down. You know, there were enough of them that cared enough about the community that they rallied a few people. But even then, they rallied people who've been on the board 20 years ago. And of course, their natural thing was, well, in 1995, this is how we did it. And obviously, I wasn't here at that point. So I just hear the stories and I'm like, well, that's good. I mean, obviously, business has changed a little bit. You know, in 1995, we might have had 5,000 people in town and we have we serve 25 or 30,000 now. And so it's good. And they were smart in the sense that they went out and found an expert, Mary Birch, who is kind of a very well known, at least in the Midwest and around the country, had run chambers in Overland Park and some other areas. She helped and kind of guided them a little bit. And really, I think, convinced them not to hire somebody too fast. And I think sometimes we get in a hurry to rehire and get somebody else in. Well, they took 9 months to try and figure out what the mess was and get all that. And so when I came in, I knew what was I knew they lost their tax exempt status, and I knew it was likely we'd get it back. Luckily, there was no intentional wrongdoing or anything. We just hadn't filed taxes for 5 years, you know, like and that. So. I kind of knew what I was getting into, and I kind of told them, hey, it's going to be a long-term game. I know you want to see a surplus next year, but for the last 3 years, you've been taking out a note at the end of the year to pay your bills. So if we can go just the year without having to take a note out, we have made a huge step in the right direction. So,
interesting. You got your hands full, but I'm sure it's exciting and different kind of every day. So let's talk about where you're getting your new ideas. You're in Kansas, right? Yep. Just outside of Kansas City, but in a rural area.
Yep. Yeah. We're the cities that I serve, Gardner and Edgerton, are the very southwestern part of the metro Kansas City area. So we're small compared to all of our neighbors. Yet we're just on the edge of the metro. So we're growing. We're a bedroom community. We actually have an average age of like 32 years old. So it's a very young community and a starter community. A lot of people move here and then they move up to the further into the city as their kids get a little older. And then Edgerton is a rural town, 1500 people. However, it has the largest development in the history of the state of Kansas. It's a, when it's all said and done, will be about a $2 billion, development of 15 to 17 million square feet of distribution center. And manufacturing space. And so we've got about, so there are big companies coming in, but they come in one at a time, two or three a year, type thing. So, if that's the type of community that we're in.
I gotcha. So what ideas are you coming up with from working with your fellow chambers or from industries that aren't really in the chamber industry, but you know, are you stealing ideas out there?
I am. I'll call myself a rural techie because I actually live 30 miles further out into the country and have a small farm on the side. That's kind of what I, as a boy who grew up in Detroit, I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll start a farm. But so I have that rural side. But I love technology and I love all the things that come out. So something as simple as this, you know, as blab I am, I mean, it's great. But, I actually, for instance, last year, I actually took 3 days. I got a scholarship, and went to a tech conference and, they were offering, basically they offered a pitch where you could pitch your ideas. And I said, look, you know, chambers don't really, they think about technology, but only in the context of what they currently use. I don't think we often think about the context of where technology is moving to. And so I wanted to go see it. And, you know, obviously the technology that they, was showcased there and all the different types of technologies and the companies were all over the map. But like even the format, and I think that's what I came back from that one is the biggest thing. The format of the conference was so different than what we see in the chamber world. And we talk about wanting to engage younger professionals. Well, it was kind of like a combination of TED Talks and panel interviews, but the interviews were 20 minutes long. No session was longer than 30 minutes, but really good in-depth content, kind of an interview setup like what you do with this. Mm-hmm. And the room setup, I mean, there was a coffee shop open the whole time. There were lounge chairs up front so you could sit on couches. And then the bar opened at like 12. You know, at 12 o'clock, the bar was open and it was open in the room and people could go and you could grab a beer and you could go in the back of the room. They actually had high boys where you could just sit and you could stand up and you could go chat with other professionals. And I think the whole idea was spontaneous, you know, interaction or, you know, it leads to just as much as structured networking would. And that's really what happened. I mean, I met a guy who does websites. He's a really large web company out of Henderson, Nevada, who just so happened to do the Henderson Chambers website. And had I not contracted already with the guy here to redo ours, I probably would have gone with him because it's a really cool custom platform and he did a great job. And the Henderson, And I mean, I would have never met him had I not just been standing back there. I wasn't having a beer yet at 12 o'clock. He might have been. But, you know, that's that. It was just a whole different realm. They focused, you know, and then the intangibles, I think, were really kind of cool, too. I mean, they had, you know, the way they recognized the sponsors and, you know, things that we do. But they were much more, I want to say, purposeful about them. And purposeful about things that matter at a conference. I mean, how often we tend to rag on rubber chicken. Well, this conference was in Nashville. They brought in the best local Nashville food that you could find. And I'm sure it cost them a little bit more. But, you know, it went a long ways because you're like, wow, this is really good. And again, it created interaction and people started talking about it and thinking about what they were doing in a different way.
I love the idea of going to other conferences, getting out of the chamber niche and the way things have always been done. And if you only read the same books by the same few authors, you pretty much start going down a path. And if you just get out of that niche, it's amazing how other things apply to the chamber industry.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what we're going to do is I just started a term as the president of the Chamber of Commerce Execs in Kansas. And one of the things we've talked about doing is for next year for our state conference, we're not going to change at all. But we've talked about maybe we'll do the last half day on Tuesday and we go, you know, Sunday night to Tuesday morning. Maybe that last half day we'll use a format like this. We'll bring in some businesses that are outside of our area and do something different. And we had a good lead this year. Our chamber exec that led the conference and all the programming, she really went out and got outside of the chamber realm speakers, but that related to what we did. You know, yes. had a local person who is kind of an executive coach and talked about executive presence. And it was really interesting because they have other perspectives from other industries or other fields that we're not always open to seeing, or we don't always have the opportunity to see. So it's kind of like chamber. It's like going to institute. We're blessed with chamber industry people like yourself or a David Ocker, but we're also blessed with I believe it's Steve Swofford or somebody who comes from outside the chamber world that really can teach us something new.
So you all were also telling me before that you're looking for new services for small businesses, for your members, not just the same old stuff every year as a membership. You're moved to tiered dues, right? Yep. And new services. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, and again, it goes to what are the things that's, you know, for a small chamber, I'm a one-person staff, which I hope to grow to two in the next couple months. What are some of the things that businesses don't necessarily know they need, but I know they need. And so one of them, for example, is their online presence. I mean, is just in often cases is very weak. And, you know, and so I got to thinking and, you know, what if we offer and we're actually doing this at our second tier, we're offering a marketing or we haven't come up with the term yet, but an online marketing audit. And we're working with a couple of our partner businesses that offer those. They're going to offer them that are members. They're going to offer them at a discounted rate. We're putting it in the second tier. We'll pay that small part of the rate because it'll be a hard cost to us, but much cheaper than what if your business went out, if you're the local coffee shop and you went out and bought it on your own, you might pay $500 for this. We're going to pay $50 for it. But for my member business that does the audit, they've got potential customers and clients. Yep. And I've got businesses that have a better presence on Google that understand Facebook and how to better utilize Facebook. We've talked about even having them build out, if they want, the company will build out their piece in the member information center since we use Chambermaster. So really trying to find ways to do that. We've explored, we're not going to do it right now, but we've explored the idea of, you know, social media, you know, managing social media for some of our companies. And, you know, and that can be good or bad. I think obviously there's things to consider there, such as the voice of the business and stuff like that. But a lot of them go out and pay somebody else to do it anyway. So if they're paying somebody else, why wouldn't they pay us? I feel like we should. It'll make me help me have a much more intimate view of their business by doing it for them on a regular basis, which only helps me sell them in many other ways. So you know, that's an example of one of the types of things that we're looking at.
Well, I think you're definitely forward thinking here. couple of years ago, I was really trying to hammer the industry about all your members need a website, but only about 40% of your small business members probably have one. Well, the chamber should facilitate that. And it's, you don't have to create the website for them. You just broker it. You're a middle person. You negotiate a preferred vendor or a discount because of size of the, you know, the size of the contract. And it really sounds like you're going down that path.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of people, and this is probably not a popular thought, but there are a lot of people who view it as, well, we shouldn't be doing that stuff. We're competing with our members. Yeah. And we're a business. And, you know, my job is to make sure 100 or 200 or 2,000, if I'm in a bigger city, businesses are successful. And I'm going to do that in different, I can't offer the same service for everybody. And I'm going to do that in different ways. And, you know, I feel like our job is to find ways to be sustainable and provide a good service for businesses in the community. And if that means I compete with a member, you know, my other members might not choose that member because they don't like their product. We all know businesses that don't listen. They do what they want to do and not what their customers want them to do. So if that's a realm that we're going to be in, we're going to compete with some of our members sometimes. Not all the time. Yeah. I'm not going to start a newspaper just because I want to start a newspaper. But if I have a newspaper that's not, you know, a community-minded newspaper, they don't really care about businesses, and my businesses are complaining, we don't have a local outlet for news and for advertising that, well, then maybe that's an area we should be in. If we just gave up everything, we wouldn't have a product because there'd be some, we can't just take the scraps in my mind. And I think sometimes we tell ourselves, well, somebody else does that in my membership, I can't offer it.
No, I think you're exactly right, and definitely in the forefront of this. There are now organizations, newspapers you brought up, that because their world is changing, they are starting to duplicate things, networking events and things of this. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think I remember you saying that your local paper is starting a business listing. Is that right?
Yeah, it's where I live, thankfully, not where I'm working. I don't have to deal with that yet, but... you know, we're actually preparing for it in case it does happen here. We're going to universal membership or universal listing on our website for all businesses, like a business directory, and we'll differentiate. But I had seen this down the road, and I met with them, and I think they'll become a member of our chamber because we have other things that they want to reach. You know, they're selling job listings, and they run job fairs, and they do all this other stuff. But they've caught on that, you know, they're a small town newspaper. I don't know what their subscription, rate is, but I mean, they're 3 days a week in a county of about 30,000. And I think they realize that, you know, everything is moving to technology. So they're pushing more and more into the online world. So they're building a business directory for the entire community, free for everybody who claims their listing. And then they sell two tiers above it, $49 and $99 a month. And they add some SEO, some, you know, unlimited brand boosters and all sorts of stuff that you know, once you sit down, but it's a nice looking product. And that's the hard part. Like I looked at it, I'm like, wow, I'm like, this is a good looking product and would rival a lot of chambers' business directories and actually has a little bit more functionality than even what we can, you know, there's certain things in there we can't do in Chamber Master that they can do in theirs. And I'm like, this is coming one day. I think we need to get ready for it. It might not happen in some communities for 20 years. It might happen in some communities tomorrow. But, you know, I feel like we have to be prepared for it. And so that's one of the reasons why here we're actually going to listing every business on our business directory.
I love it. You know, I think you're totally right. These things, these trends are, they're coming. It's better to be out and ahead of them. Your members would compete against you in a minute. So we shouldn't feel guilty about competing to serve our members. We listen, we get the wants and needs, and then we turn around and offer it up as a product or a service. I mean, that's business. And that's what we are, small business.
And if we can offer it, better than them. And some cases we can, some cases we can't. But if we can offer it better and we can serve the entire community, why wouldn't we want to do that? I mean, that's if your mission, you know, one of the things we talk about our mission here is our mission is to serve the business community, not just we don't actually have in our mission to serve members. To us, membership is a function of whether you want to call it a program, a service, a way we pay the bills. It's a function of what we do. One day we might not have membership. I mean, we might just, you know, sell services, and that's how we operate and serve the community. And if that's what they want, then maybe that's the way we should move.
Yeah. Well, Jay, I could talk to you all day, Jason. How about some contact information for you in case somebody wants to follow up and pick your brain a little bit on this stuff?
You know, they could reach me on my phone. I'm going to give my cell phone, and I know not many people do that, but I'm only in my office about 5 hours a week, and I'm out and about. I try and do most of my work out with businesses, but it's 785-418-3276. They can go to I'm going to share this, even though it's our new website is semi-public. It's turned on because we had to play around with some functionality with Chamber Master and that. However, there's some pieces that aren't fully built out, so we're doing that. We're not telling anybody, but I'd love to hear input, good and bad. It's Gardner Edgerton, and so it's Gardner, Edgerton.org. If you go to Gardner Edgerton Chamber, it's just GardnerEdgerton.org. And I'd love to hear some people's feedback. We did this a little different. We used Chamber Master on the back end. We're actually, the funny thing, Frank, the last thought is this chamber was number 50 using Chamber Master in the country. Our ID number is 50. I think we started using it like 2004 or 2005. But when I got here last year, Chamber Master told me that we were using what was called Basic. And I think they stopped servicing that or selling it in like 2010. So we hadn't updated it at all, so we've updated it. We've got a new WordPress website that we used a local designer for, and I think he's done a great job. And you know, we'll get that finished up. But I'd love to hear anybody's thought or feedback, and my email is on there as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Jason. You have a wonderful weekend, and again, thanks for coming on the Chamber Focus Show.
Thanks.
All right. Bye bye. So we're going to bring on Mary Ellen Dombrowski, and she's going to pop in here. Wonder what happened to Greg DeRocher today, our co-host. He's AWOL. Hopefully he and his family are all good. Probably got caught up doing that radio interview. Hello, Mary Ellen.
Hello there. How are you, Frank?
Well, thank you very much.
I'm just going to put my volume up a little bit now.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, well, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. I appreciate all that you do for the industry, Frank.
Yeah, I'm just having a ton of fun. It's a beautiful thing when you can make a living by doing what you would do for free, basically.
Indeed. Indeed.
So can you give a little background about, you know, what chamber you're with and your history there?
Yeah, I'm with the Glastonbury, Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. I've been here 9 years. I'm also the interim director of the East Hartford Chamber of Commerce. Their director retired in January, and they're one of the organizations that we're talking with about merging.
Okay. And so you've been there 9 years. What was your background before you came into the chamber industry?
Before that time, I was at a nonprofit electrical contractors non-union association for 16 years. It was a three-state organization.
Wow.
And I was there for an awful long time, and with one interview, I switched over to the chamber world. So I was in association management.
Fantastic. Well, that's a diverse background, and that's probably been pretty helpful to you.
Very much so. And I was I owned my own business at one point, too, so a small retail shop. So
I think that is the best training possible for a Chamber of Commerce person, that you've actually walked in the shoes.
Gives you compassion and understanding for the small business owner. It's
not easy,
myself.
Is it? Yeah, I own 4 retail stores, and I wouldn't wish that on an enemy, really.
I know. It owns you. That's what you
learned. Jason, that we just had on before, was a restaurateur, and that's the worst from what I hear about owning your life. So.
Very difficult. That's on call all the time.
Yeah, brutal. All right, so you were saying that you're going through a merger process, and that is no small thing. How did this all come about?
Well, actually, it started with Sarah Sladek's book, The End of Membership as We Know It. I bought a dozen copies, handed it out to my board members, and they really took it to heart, realizing that membership organizations are not going to be around forever. And while we're viable, it makes sense to do something now to plan for the future. So this has been going on for about a year and a half now. We're talking and we're hoping this will happen by year end, but we originally were talking with another regional chamber and 2 other chambers and a business association in addition to ourselves. It didn't really work out. I think it was too many people at one time. So now we're down, the county chamber is no longer in the conversation. So it's the chamber I'm currently managing. The other chamber's director left and took a different position in June. And the third group is a small business association, which actually is a spinoff of this chamber from about 10 years ago.
I see. And you're thinking that you're duplicating efforts and creating multiple memberships and just there's a bunch of economies of scale maybe by working together?
I think there will be ultimately, but we have a very big event here that allows us in Glastonbury to have a larger staff. We have 5 full-time people. The other chambers have a part-time person, and the business group has a very, very part-time person. They just don't have the resources.
Yeah.
So by coming together, we'll have 8 people all together on the staff. It's worked out that the signature events of these other organizations are, they're all different. So we're bringing the schedule together and not really repeating anything. We're going to merge 3 golf tournaments into 1, which ought to be fun. And we'll have 1 annual meeting instead of 3. But other than that, we're bringing on a business expo. We're bringing on a women's event. We're bringing on a gala in addition to what we already do. So it just happened to work out beautifully that way with scheduling the events.
And it sounds like this is kind of board driven. I mean, if you tried to make this happen yourself, you'd probably get a lot of pushback. This has to come from the volunteers.
It is coming from the volunteers. It's actually going to end up going to vote with each organization's membership. So until it's over, it's not over. You never know. You never know what that final vote is going to be. We hope it'll move forward, but it's a lot of work, a lot of figuring out how do you get the buy-in? How do people get to voice their opinion? So we've had a task force that is basically the executive committee from all the parties that are involved. And we have met for 1.5 years on a pretty regular basis, putting together the bones. Now we have task forces that are comprised of board members from each of the organizations. And we're putting together the due structures and the sponsorships and all of those things together, getting more feedback and input from other board leaders. So that has worked out well. And we're really coming to some good solutions by bringing everybody in.
I know that these things always start and stumble and start again, and it's never totally smooth all the way to completion. Do you feel like if you were coaching another chamber that's looked around and said, you know, there's 7 of us or something in the county, you know, what's the process to make this happen? Can the staffs get together and make this happen?
Or I really don't think so. Just so happened that one of the organization's directors retired. So
a catalyst there.
That was, I believe, was a catalyst in addition to realizing that membership organizations are changing, for which I appreciate the board recognizing that. That was critical.
So you have a lot of trust with your board, I'm thinking. You've been there 9 years.
Yes.
They know you're not career building. You're not resume building. You're not you're coming in as this kingdom building.
No.
Yeah. So that's another element to a successful merger, I would think, is you got to have some
trust. You really do. But, you know, I think staff coming together would be very difficult because people are worried about their jobs.
It just
happens that the 2 of the other organizations are without leaders now. And the other one was always voluntary, the business association. So I'm the only one that's a chamber president that's here for the group. Hope I get the job, obviously. I'm not concerned about that. But staffing is a big problem. And that's your economies of scale right there. So through attrition, that piece worked. But that could be pretty sketchy. That could be difficult.
How many members might you have when this is
right
all said?
Right here in Glastonbury, we have 500. We'll have 1,000.
Yeah, so that's nice. I mean, that now you're starting to – at 500 members, I'm sure you have clout. But, you know, 1,000 members, it does sound
regional.
Better.
And I think we don't do anything now in economic development. I think we're going to be able to enter into different areas and have more expertise. Our membership base is going to expand to include some very, very large companies that we don't have right here in the chamber in Glastonbury, but we'll be bringing in major Coca-Cola and Pratt & Whitney, and we're exposed to a lot of different types of members that are can be very, very beneficial for everyone.
Exciting times, huh?
We'll be glad when it's done, though. You know, it's the process is uncertain because it's going on for so long, and you know, and we're New Englanders. We don't like change, so that doesn't help that we're that it's here. But it'll be very good when it's done, because we're going to plow forward and really be successful with whatever it ends up being.
Interesting. Well, good luck with that. I think it's really a trend in the industry. I've been reading for a long time that it's so easy to form a nonprofit that people do it sometimes, even when there's another organization that has the capacity to add a service or something. They're just popping up everywhere. And the chamber industry is in the same. You know, some counties have 8 or 10 chambers serving the same basic area, and I don't think it's sustainable or in the best interest of the members long term.
Well, you know what we're finding? Our local banks, we probably have 7 or 8 banks that are member of our chamber, and they belong to 2 of the others as well. And so part of the struggle or part of the challenge is finding how do we retain those dollars, because they're not going to, their investment is going to be reduced dramatically. So we're going to have to emphasize more sponsorship support. And we're actually doing tiered sponsorship levels to upsell.
So not necessarily tiered dues. You're still on fair share.
We are doing tiered dues.
Oh, you're doing tiered dues.
And then we're going to do the sponsorships that are overarching all, because we will end up having one major event every other month. We're going to have 6 major events, so there'll be plenty of room. Wow. Hitting all different demographics, from a golf tournament to an event that has 17,000 attendees. So it's really great for the businesses. Great opportunity.
Well, let's talk about that event. What is
that
event?
That's the Apple Harvest Festival. We had our 41st year this year. That's the weekend after Columbus Day in October. And this is an event that started out on Town Green. It was a nice little homespun event. And over the years, it's grown so that it's on by the riverfront, by the Connecticut River, on a 15-acre plot. We have big amusement rides. We have 40 bands. It's open at night, Friday night, all day Saturday, Saturday night, and Sunday. We have local groups come in. The kids come in and do some of the local theater and that. And we have a beer garden. We have a 5K road race. It's become a really, really giant signature event for the town and for us. It's a monster. It takes us a month to do it. We have a great team of about 35 people who have been with us for several years. And we've kind of got it down, but there's always a nuance. There's always something that we end up with 350 volunteers over the weekend, including about 65 high school students who are invaluable to us. So it's really a community. It's regionally, it attracts people from the region, but it's very community oriented. Of tradition for this town. The college kids come home because they want to see their friends at the Apple Fest, and you see multi-generations in attendance. It's really wonderful. And it's the last event of the fall. So this year we had snowflakes. So you never know.
A lot of people in the chamber industry are concerned that chambers, they get so tied up in doing events. It's almost like there's an event every day of some sort. And you spread yourselves thin, and you become a chamber of events, and then you have to hire staff that are event motivated, even though you have a different mission. But you know, running an event takes passion and skill, and so you got to hire for it. It sounds to me like you've made a decision there at your chamber that this thing is so darn valuable that it is actually good for our chamber to do. You know, we're not going to hand this off to somebody else.
No. We're an event-driven chamber. This chamber, and it's so funny that chambers really have personalities, kind of like churches I equate it to. You have to find the one that fits you. They all have personalities, and our chamber has always been event-driven. Again, this event's 41 years old, so it's been around a long time. We put on training programs. We don't get a lot of response. I think our members go to their professional associations for training. They don't really turn to us.
Interesting.
So it's going to be interesting with the merger, bringing the cultures together, to see we have one organization that's very politically motivated, Another one has been involved with more economic development on the local level. So it's going to be a merging of the personalities. We will be event driven as that organization initially, because we're going to need it to fund the eight, you know, the overhead of three offices and eight employees. So until we can figure out another way to generate that kind of income, we'll have to continue to do the events. But I know my position will be changing. I'm a working director. You know, I have responsibility, and I think people are going to have to absorb some of what I do, because I'm going to be doing going out and out and about and doing other things. So it'll be interesting.
So these events, then, they're not kind of break even for you. They really bring in a substantial amount of non-dues revenue.
We made this year's Apple Fest, we made like $150,000 was the profit. It's a monster.
Beautiful.
But we spend 3 months putting it together. So, it's just a win-win. That particular event is really a win-win. We really are of the belief that you should have some public events where the community pays admission, because you can generate extra money at these events without just depending on sponsorships. So we've actually, and our community likes the outside events. So we actually started a new one in June called the Farm and Folk Festival. And at that one, it was much low key and quiet, and, you know, no frenetic lights and clanging of the amusement rides and all that. I didn't say, too, at that Apple Fest, we have 100 crafters and 40 food trucks. So it's just a joke. So at this Farm and Folk, we had a wonderful farmer's market and 12 food trucks and 12 bands. And that was it. It was just very sweet and a really nice event. We had 1,200 people come and pay to come into it. And they spent the day. There are a lot of young families, and we're trying to figure out, like everybody else, what's going to bring the millennials in and how do we reach into that demographic. So their exposure to us, or their first exposure, was this lovely event that they all enjoyed for the day. There's always something, right?
What did you learn about the millennials?
At that event, it was kind of, there were a lot of young families, a lot of pregnant gals. We had a nursing station, a lot of little kids, not the demographic we see at the chamber events. They hung out all day. It was very slow paced. It was quiet and relaxing. And there was no trash. Everything was picked up. It had such a sweet ambiance at the event. What I learned about them as business people, I don't think they were our business members. They just were not our members. They were just part of the community.
And I've been preaching for quite a while here that the chambers serve more than just the members. Right. You know, in some communities, only 10%. You know, if you have a big major metro, your membership, you might have 1,000 members, but it's really only 10% of the community. Right. But really, you care about all the community, people that are members and non-members.
That's part of the mission statement of the Glastonbury Chamber, is to enhance not only the business members, but the community at large. So that's always been in this particular chamber. That's always been their mission. So we'll see if that will change, I'm sure, to a certain extent when you bring other cultures in. Mm. It'll be interesting to see where that all lands and to balance it.
When is the vote on your merger?
It's all going to be voted by December 21st. Everybody should have. Imminent. It's imminent.
Around the corner. Is it just a simple document, up and down kind of vote?
The bylaws of the given organizations and the statutes, we all have to have a meeting in person. And we have to have a minimum of 10% of the members present. And of that, 2/3 has to vote in favor in order for it to be approved. So
this is quite an undertaking. You might be kind of, at some point, did you say, I should never have brought this up?
I didn't bring it up. I'm so grateful that I have a board that really cares about the organization, and they're only looking out for the welfare of this organization. There are no personal agendas or anything. So part of what I'm not looking forward to necessarily. I love my board. We have a great, great working relationship, and they're very trusting. They're very nimble. They let us try things. They let us fail. Sometimes we really haven't failed, but we have had less successful things than others. And with a new board that's going to be very, very large initially, it'll be over 50. And people know each other. It'll be interesting to see the dynamic of how that all, it'll be a change for a couple of years till everybody gets used to one another.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be exciting times for you for a while.
It can only go up. It can only get better. We have more opportunities, more resources, more people with great talent that we haven't had now. And so it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be fun to look back on this as a pivotal moment in the history of your area.
In Connecticut, we have a lot of regional chambers. There are not a whole lot of freestanding chambers anymore. So it is the trend here. And we've had some great models to borrow bylaws and, you know, learn from the mistakes that others have made. And I'm sure we'll be able to impart information to people down the road as they go down this course as well.
I loved what you said about the board being kind of selfless, you know, keeping the big picture. I would think that's another angle of this is you have to know your board well enough to that is this the right year? You know, keep your powder dry if you think that the board is just doesn't have the right dynamics.
And they have to get to know each other. You know, there's going to be some pushback. Well, can't we have the golf tournament in our town? But we always did this. But you've put together a grand list of your plan, your business plan for the year. And I think as we move along, people are going to be questioning why we don't do this anymore and how come it's here and not there. And so I think it'll be probably 2 years of settling in just getting to trust each other, realize that it's a regional entity and we're not separate anymore. But it's hard to get. Mm-hmm. This chamber is 113 years old. The other ones is 100 years old. So we're used to running ourselves autonomously. So it's going to be a very big change. But people understand all in all the reason why. That it for the good of the order, there may not be great economies of scale today, but this is about the future. It's not about the moment. It's about where we're going to be in 10 years.
Well, it's good stuff, and I wish you the best of luck on that and your non-dues revenue event. You're really running a heck of a show down there.
I have the best team. I have the greatest staff, and we just love our job. We love the organization, and we really are family. So it makes it a delight to come to work every day. Yeah. It's not always that way in every office,
great industry.
But that's what we have right now, and I'm just so blessed, so fortunate.
And you're also a runner, aren't you? Haven't I seen on Facebook that do you do marathons?
I've
done
a half marathon. I don't do the full. Okay. I'm only half crazy, as they say. But I've joined a great running group in Connecticut called Run 169 Towns Society. And it's all for fun. We have 169 towns in Connecticut. And the purpose is to run a timed race in every single town. So when you hit 100 towns, everybody comes to your 100th race and you run in a tutu. And when you hit 169 towns, they crown you king or queen. So it's just a great community group. It's just wonderful. Made so many new friends. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. Well, if somebody wants to get in touch with you to, you know, pick your brain about this kind of stuff, what's a good way to do that?
Mary Ellen at GlastonburyChamber.com or 860-659-3587.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. We'll be on the Chamber Focus Show, not next week because it's Thanksgiving, but the week after.